All right, second half kickoff here. It's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. David Johnston, Sam Franco along with you. Joined in the 8 o'clock hour on Fridays before Georgia games, our man, Russ Tanner, former Georgia center, mortgage banker of Prime Lending, and you can find Russ online at athenslender.com. Russ, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's good to be here this morning. Good to see you. Good to see y'all smiling faces.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Had a lot of fun with Greeny last week, but he ain't calling us this week, so it's just the three of us this week.
Yeah, that you know, go ahead and get Neek to call him, man. I heard y'all saying that Dominique's going to call
him. Neek's going to call us at 9:30.
I mean, what would I ask Dominique? Dominique,
you remember
that time? How was that dunk? Remember that dunk you had that time? It was cool.
That's kind of how I feel about this. It would be like the old SNL bit, the Chris Farley show, you know, he's just a, Paul McCartney, you remember when you were in the Beatles?
Was that cool? Yeah, you got robbed, man. Your dunk was awesome. So, that's cool, man. I mean, I love my boy Greeny, but to get Neek on, man, that's big time.
So. Yeah.
Y'all are pulling some strings around here.
With you and Greeny and Neek, I mean, that's former Georgia superstar athletes that we get here.
Two out of three ain't bad.
Man, all right, so Russ, did you just completely fall over into just a big, massive pile of a human being on that pass that Tennessee completed?
Man. I mean, it's like everybody, I guess. You know, being a fan is hard work.
Yep.
I mean, it just stinks.
It is.
But, you know, we're coming down there, and, you know, Georgia gets the ball back. You think, all right, Eason, here's your shot, baby. And I realized that I had not done my part for the game. I did not have my lucky hat on, turn around backwards. And I realized real soon that I had let the guys down. So before the drive, I went and got my hat out of the closet because I was at home watching the game. It's normally just my at-the-stadium hat. But I went and got it, and I flipped the switch. I turned it around backwards, which is the luck charm that I have to do for the team to be able to win.
So you actually got them that last
touchdown. I got the touchdown for them when I turned my hat around and almost tore my Achilles when I jumped up and tried to run and yell, and our kids were looking at me and my wife like, what is wrong with you idiots? Like, y'all are crazy. So we're sitting there, and, you know, like probably everybody, I started telling her after that, I was like, it ain't over. We got to stop one play. And then you're like, all right, we got to stop one play. What, 15-yard penalty? Oh. That ain't good.
Offsides.
Five more yards.
Well, we're kicking it. What are we doing? They got on the 50. Oh, crap. They got one. Don't worry, babe. The chance of them completing this are minimal.
Well,
and then all of a sudden, it's just you went from top of the world as excited as you could be to, are you – what?
Unbelievable.
And our kids are like, what happened? Like, shut it, kids.
Yeah, that's rough.
No talkie right now.
You should have told your kids, too. It's like, by the way, this is this is what's going to be like for you for the rest of your life, being a Georgia fan.
Yeah, that's so – it's you know, it's just like you just want to say, you know, that's so Georgia. It just –
I know.
It happens.
I mean, if you take the Tech game from a couple of years ago, if you take the Auburn game, I mean, it's just, wow, that's just too many of these and too short a span.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was the heart rip out. I mean, there's no doubt about it. When it comes to your fandom, there's not much Tennessee could have done more to rip your heart out in that situation.
And, of course, it was the 15th anniversary of the Hobnail boot.
Yeah, so now people are trying to say the Dobnail boot. Man, don't say that.
Like, I haven't even heard that yet.
You hadn't heard the Dobnail boot?
No, yeah, thank God I hadn't heard that.
I actually think that's kind of clever. I hate to say it.
I didn't say it's not clever. I just don't like it.
Yeah. So, I didn't say I liked it.
But hey, that is clever on their part. Give Tennessee credit where it's due. You know, Dobbs put the throw where he had to. I mean, that number 15 for them.
He went up and got it. Yeah.
I mean, everybody, all of our guys were in position and went up to try to bat the ball down. And he was bigger and stronger than what our DBs were.
And he just stuck in his hands and he held on to it. Yeah. You know, that's funny how you mention that because that one play kind of magnified some of Georgia's issues where you like the taller wide receivers over the DBs. Although Georgia did have Lorenzo Carter out there, although
behind him.
Yeah. I know. The lack of a kicker that you can do a little bit more with hurt on that as well. So it was just kind of funny how one play just kind of shows.
Yeah, I mean, it's sour grapes to sit here and go back and say, you know, what should have happened or why this wasn't right. But, you know, I honestly wasn't even a fan of the unsportsmanlike call.
No.
Because if you look at it, it was Rico McGraw, and he wasn't showing anybody up. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't run out in the middle of the field and do some big demonstrative thing or take his helmet off and get jawing in somebody's face. I mean, when the team was coming back to the sideline, he ran and jumped on his guy celebrating. I mean, referees should not make a call that's going to affect the game over something like that. Yeah. Like, nobody for Tennessee would have said a single word about this should have been a penalty. The guy had his helmet off. You need to throw unsportsmanlike on him for that because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would have said anything. And all of a sudden you get a referee standing over there just, you know, being like a bean counter. Okay, here we go. Up, there's a player on the field. Technically, by rule book 3.2-A, that's a 15-yard penalty because he crossed the white line. Like, man, don't be that guy, Riff. Like, let the guys play the game and don't make a call that's going to.
But where do you draw the line, though, if you're the officials? I mean,
I think you make the call if a guy's doing something to draw attention
to
himself.
Right,
I think that rule's in place for somebody on the field if Riley Ridley had scored the touchdown and taken his helmet off and ran back across the field or jawed at a Tennessee guy or something to draw attention to himself. That's the penalty.
Right.
That's the spirit of the penalty. You can't go by the technical side of every single time if somebody's on the field without a helmet, it's a penalty. And that's just my opinion. I mean, it's just like anything else. There's always room for interpretation.
Right.
I mean, there's holding calls all the time that don't get called because they look at it and say, that's not truly affecting the play. It's just going on. We're going to let that slide.
There's holding on every play, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Pass interference. There was two.
Did you hold on every play?
No, of course not. I was too good. you hold. I mean, in the middle, I mean, if you play guard and center, it's all, you know, you can do whatever you want to do down there. It's got to be pretty bad to get a holding penalty.
Yeah.
But there was two pass interference penalties on Tennessee. Should have been.
Right.
On that play. And give those guys credit. I mean, they pushed the rules. And if you go down and look at it, they walled off our guys.
Right.
It was like doggone Moses going through the Red Sea. It just parted for number 15 to walk into the promised land and catch the ball.
It was a play they had practiced before.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, their guys are not just happen to run down there and just say, oh, whoops, did I bump into you? Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, they put their hands on the guys and walled them off. They practice that. And basically you're saying, we don't think the refs are going to call this in this situation. And they probably shouldn't call it. I'm fine with them not calling it. But don't make the other calls, too.
But don't call the 15-yard penalty on Rico McGraw either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. And then it was a disastrous turn of events. You had an offsides that gave them five more yards. They had a pretty good return on the kickoff.
Yeah.
So suddenly, all they need is, I mean, you know, it's funny – they were at the, what was it, 43 or 47? What was the distance on it? Whatever it
43,
was.
43. Yeah.
You know, 43 yards. I mean, I know that's still a Hail Mary. That's still a long play, but that's not.
It's not a 70
60 yards. You know, 43, you know,
that's a throw that Dobbs can make easily.
Yeah, for Tennessee, they're thinking, okay, well, 43, this is at least a little more doable.
He can accurately throw the ball. Yeah. He can put it where he wants to at the right trajectory.
Exactly.
You're throwing from 60 or 70 yards. Man, you're backing up, you're getting a running start, you're crow hopping and just throwing that thing as far as you can throw it. And usually you don't even see that ball land in the end zone.
Right.
It's either too long, too wide, short.
They might even have another play concocted where they're throwing it 10 yards downfield and
trying to hook and ladder
30 laterals.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
But 43 gives you hope.
Yeah, I mean, you can make that throw. I mean, Dobbs can make a 43-yard throw easily with his feet planted and putting it where he wants to. So, you know, I think Butch, you know, give Butch one piece of credit. I think he got Kirby with a Jedi mind trick. I mean, he lined up in a hands team.
Yeah.
Like he was protecting the onside kick from the 20-yard line. like, what? What?
Yeah.
We're not going to onside kick this.
Not going to onside kick this thing.
And then we pooched it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just Sam and I, you know, we sit next to each other in the press box. And it was like, generally when the press box is a bunch of guys that have been doing this for so long that there's really no emotion just because you're not allowed to cheer in the press part of the press box. But, man, it was even – you could even feel kind of a wave go through the press box when Eason hit Ridley on that touchdown. And then, obviously, it was just complete opposite of that when Tennessee ended up winning the game there. But it looks like Mr. Eason – I know it's a very small sample size, but – the touchdown throw against Missouri and now the one against Tennessee. He's a little knack for making some big plays here.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Man, half of what you want to say out of your quarterback is just mindset.
Yeah.
And you can say Eason. Now, Eason is he's making a lot of mistakes right now. The fumble in the end zone, huge mistake. You don't pump fake and pull it down in the end zone. You know, people said that the Chaney shouldn't have put him in that position. No, that's fine. Play call is fine. But Eason's got to understand if you're there – if it's a three-step drop or a five-step drop, it's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, ball's out.
Right.
You got to throw the ball then. You can't pump fake and step up. There's just not enough room. Those guys are pinning their ears back and coming. So, I mean, that's a rookie mistake. He does a lot of that. I mean, he's had a few bad throws, several bad throws. He's made a couple interceptions. But you see that he's got the mentality that makes you feel confident when he lines up. Like, all right,
yep,
this kid gets it. He ain't scared. And that's half the battle in the SEC.
It is. And seeing Ridley make the catch makes you feel good, too. You had, you know, two of the young guys, two freshmen that were making the play. Isaac Nauta had a huge game.
Yeah.
We see why he was a five-star tight end coming out of high school, too. There was still a lot of good stuff that came out of that game. Unfortunately, just the last last 10 seconds was just a disaster.
Look, I was proud of the team. I was proud of the preparation and how they came out because, you know, the Ole Miss game was embarrassing. It was an embarrassing game to watch, an embarrassing game to be a part of. I guarantee you, the coaching staff, the players, everybody, you look at a game like that and say, we didn't even show up today. We left our jock strap back at the Buttsmere building, apparently. We're not even ready to play big boy football because Ole Miss thoroughly thrashed us in every aspect of the game, start to finish. We showed up against Tennessee, and this Tennessee team right now is more talented than Georgia. If you look at their roster, they are probably a more talented football team with better players at a lot of positions across the field. But Georgia showed up and brought the fight to them. I was really proud of that, really proud of how the guys responded after the butt-whooping they got down in Ole Miss to show up and really play start to finish as hard as they could. Mistakes were made, sure, but they gave effort and they did not give up. And that's big. And you hope that mentality is what kind of carries over for the attitude of this team, you know, throughout the rest of this year and then springboarding into the next two or three years, which hopefully will be back to what we as fans hope for.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're just kind of having to kind of go through it this year. By the way, Stevie T says, ask Russ, they never call pass interference on Hail Marys. So in my opinion, I'm not only telling defenders to bat the ball down, I'm telling them to be extremely physical and have several defenders jump into the players, knock them off their feet, not just try to bat the ball down to a certain extent. What are your thoughts on that strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I like the strategy too, but I think Kirby even said it's something that they all thought the ball was going to somebody else, like their other receiver, not number 15.
Right.
And I think they were all, if you go back and look at it, we were mobbing their other receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know where 15 came from. I mean, he just ran out of nowhere. And when the ball's in the air, it, you know, it's not like they're in the Matrix where they slow time down and can grab bullets with their fingers and move
just
them
feels
over.
Like it.
You know, as a player, it's all going very, very fast. And that ball's in the air, you're trying to look at it. And, you know, we want to say that, yeah, man, use your head. Get up and just grab them, knock them down. But your natural instincts tell you, find the ball, go get the ball.
Yeah.
So those guys start looking up at the ball coming down to them. And all of a sudden, this other cat runs in. And he went and got it. He made the play. Our guys jumped as high as they could jump. But he's 6'5". Could get up.
Just shows another one of the, you know, potential – issues that Georgia has that kind of got magnified on those last, not the one play, but those last, I guess, the sequence, I guess the last two plays, really, the kickoff and the touchdown, the Hail Mary.
Yeah, and, you know, Kirby always talks about, you know, the 24-hour rule and, you know, moving on and things like that, but that just seems like it'd be really, really hard after something like this.
Yeah, I know. It was hard for the fans.
Yeah.
And it was hard.
You know, it was hard for the players and the coaches, too.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah, it was, you know. And you could tell.
Although, from what I understand, Russ, the players and coaches don't want to win as bad as the fans.
Right. No, they don't. That's what we fans say, right? Like, what's wrong with these guys? They don't even want to win. Fire them all. We're four games in.
Yeah.
Fire them all.
Well,
you know, it's.
Believe us, the players and coaches want to win
a lot
worse.
A lot more. You know, and Georgia fans have to step back and realize we need to go back and play clips from before the season where nobody honestly picked. Georgia to go better than probably 9-3 this year. We all said if we win 10 games, man, great
year. Season.
And you got to look at, you're our first year head coach with a true freshman quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and find me, stat guy, a situation where you had a first year head coach and a true freshman quarterback that won double digit games.
Plus, the thing too is, I mean, it's the 9-3 still doable. I mean,
we've lost to two top 10 teams.
Yeah.
I know Ole Miss is not technically there. But they're a top 10
team
good. In the country.
They're very good. But, I mean, I don't know about the Florida game, but Georgia should be favored in everything else.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
So, you know, they need to play well the rest of the year.
Right.
I mean, they need to go and try to run the table or at least make it through the rest of the season, you know, 6-1 or however many games are left, 5-1, whatever it is.
Well, let's see. Yeah, no, 7 games left.
Okay, so
yeah.
Either run the table, go 7-6-1.
Yeah.
I mean, then I think at that point you can look back and say, hey, we've really got something to build on here. But, you know, they've got to finish strong, and they've got to have the right attitude. And I think that's the thing you hear Kirby preach.
Yeah.
There ain't no moral victories. We're not happy that we came close with Tennessee and had them where we wanted them. We want to win.
Right. Now, you also have to remember, too, the other teams that Georgia's playing are thinking, hey, this Georgia team may not be quite as good as they've been the last few years. We can get them.
Yeah.
So they're going to be having to deal with that because, as always, like to say, the other teams are on scholarship, too.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah. My new favorite saying I'm hearing all the people say now and across the league, let's start using this, is the word arm talent.
Arm talent.
So Jacob Eason, we got a quarterback with arm talent. Ooh. But, you know, Josh Dobbs has arm talent too, and so those other guys.
He's got leg talent.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, you know, it's just, man, it's just so hard to sit back and look at a team and say this is what should have happened and this is why it happened. I mean, football is a dynamic sport. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of different moving parts. Everybody's got to do their job and do it well on every play. And it's cliche, but it's cliche because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Kirby's trying to get these guys to buy into, is understanding. You got to do your job every single time and let the rest kind of take care of itself. And right now, you know, unfortunately, there's too many situations where somebody's not doing their job, and we've got 2 losses because of it.
And this weekend, can't lit up just because South Carolina seems to be down either.
No. What's your?
And I don't think they will.
What's the over-under on this game, by the way?
40. 40.5, yeah.
40.5.
Sam and I were talking about earlier this morning that, you know, if you just go by the point spread and the over-under, Vegas is saying Georgia should win 24-17.
Seems high-scoring to me.
Really?
You go under that.
I've got more like 13-9.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, could be, I guess. I don't know.
I guess
it's going to depend on – well, it's going to be, I think, a nice day on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, you know, will the field conditions be – I'm sure the field drains fine. I'm sure that's not going to be much of a problem. I don't know.
Well, who knows? I mean, Columbia is not the most beautiful place in the world anyway. So, I'm sure the scenery won't be messed up.
It's funny, though, how, you know, as great a player as David Pollock was, one of the best ones George has ever had, his most famous play took place in Columbia.
No doubt. Put him on the map.
That's the one, they did put him on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah, so – there's good memories from Columbia. There's some bad ones,
and
too.
And bad ones, too. Yeah, yeah. You know, but and it's gonna be interesting to see how this game goes, because you got 2 programs that are pretty similar. Fortunately, I think we're ahead of South Carolina as far as talent, recruiting, a lot of things there. Glad we're not South Carolina. But they've got a true freshman quarterback playing, super talented guy that they basically have said, you know, we're going to give him the reins this year. One of my good buddies is a South Carolina guy, and he said, man, who'd they play last week? They play
Texas A&M.
A&M. And they said they were struggling with McElwain, their freshman quarterback in there. And they brought in the Perry North guy, their 5th-year senior, and he went down the field and scored.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like they can look and see, there's no doubt right now Perry North is their guy as far as giving them the best chance to win. But I think Muschamp knows we're not winning nothing. We ain't winning nothing of consequence this year. So they're going to put their young cat in, let him make his mistakes and learn, you know, kind of trial by fire. So, you know, George's got to take advantage of that. They've got to make him be uncomfortable and try to force him into some of those rookie mistakes we've been talking about Eason making.
And it sounds like, though, for at least this game, just because McElwain just doesn't give them a passing presence, maybe it's the arm talent, but this is one they want. I mean, Orth is going to be their guy to at least start and then see how he does.
Yeah, it totally makes sense what you're talking about there. You know, if you're going to have a bad season or not, you know, winning anything like you said, then, yeah, you want to get your guy that's going to be there next year some lumps and get him his work in.
Yeah, because you don't want a guy coming in next year fresh again where you have an unproven commodity.
Right.
You want to know what you're bringing, you know, when the ball's teed up that first game, you want to know a little bit more about what you got back there and what you can rely on, and also for your guys to be able to know that what you got. And I think that's the big thing for Eason. You know, you're going to have a lot of confidence from this team, from the Georgia team going forward with Eason, because they now think and know and believe, and rightfully so, that if they can keep it close, they're not out of the game.
Right.
Because you've got a cat back there pulling the trigger that can make it happen and ain't scared to throw the ball where it has to go, you know, when the chips are on the table. So, you know, hopefully you'll see the confidence of the Georgia team rise because of Eason progressing and getting better and better as the season goes on.
I like how we usually spend the first segment talking about the previous game.
Yeah.
But we moved on quicker than we normally do.
Of course we did. Our hearts were, our hearts are torn out by the old
just ripped and they just grabbed them, just ripped them apart.
Old Rotten Top.
Yeah.
Old Rotten Top ripped them out on us.
Sam and I are doing a Facebook Live after the game, and there's a their band starts playing Rocky Top. It was just
like, no, we don't need that right now, guys.
It was just a bad day. Just a bad, bad day. Nothing else you can really say about it. By the way, so Chuck sends us a, I don't know if this was a photo off of, I guess, off his phone, and it was when Tennessee took the lead on the fumble in the end zone, and they're showing them celebrating on the sideline. There's a guy on the field who's not even dressed out who's celebrating, and the officials are looking right at him, and nothing was called. Or no, this was maybe it wasn't right after the touchdown, I don't know, but you can see a guy who's, again, not even dressed out.
I think that was after the interception.
Oh, you're right. That's what that was. So you've seen that photo too?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That was after the pick because, yeah, there was 2:10 left. And that's when a lot of Georgia fans took off.
Right.
They missed a heck of an ending.
Can't leave until it's over.
Yeah.
Although maybe it was better that you didn't see
it. Well, I was going to say, you missed the touchdown to Ridley, but then you also missed the crusher.
And look, I know that obviously Georgia didn't win, but that throw to Ridley still, I mean, every time I look back on it, it's one of the best throws I've ever seen.
You know, and the crazy thing about it was a great throw, but the thing that made him open was Isaiah McKenzie. And it's crazy to me that now defenses are paying so much attention to Isaiah McKenzie. Give credit to that kid for what he's done so far this year. But their safety over the top ended up going to the middle of the field to cover McKenzie because he was running kind of a seam up the hash, and it left Ridley in a one-on-one situation outside. And basically, he was faster than the guy covering.
Yeah, he turned on the jets
with no safety over the top. But he was open because McKenzie drew double coverage. So, you know, I guess it's
thank goodness for McKenzie.
Yeah, he's played great, but man, he's 5'8" and he's the deep threat that everybody's paying attention to. So, you know,
at least it worked there for sure.
It did. No, it did. And Ridley made a play, and Eason made a great throw.
All right, Russ Tanner here in the studio with us.
All right, 8:32, back here on the morning show. We are presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System, Sam Franco, David Johnston, and Russ Tanner along with you. You can call us at 706-549-6000, email 960theref@coxradio.com. Obviously a little weird weekend coming up as the Dogs will play at 2:30 on Sunday against South Carolina. Not anything that we all expected, but you know, you got to roll the punches sometimes when a giant hurricane is rolling your way.
Yeah, it's talk about a I don't know the term I was going to use. It messes it all up, like it just messes up everything. But
yeah,
you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, the people I feel sorry for with this are like the team logistic guys, the guys who have to arrange all the hotels, all the food, all the meals, the transportation. I mean, the coaches and the players, I mean, whatever. I mean, they'll be fine. I mean, you know, they deal with things changing all the time. And these coaches, I mean, they'll work hard and they'll all have their contingency plans in place and figure out real quick how do we – a lot of conversations about how do we make pregame. Now, what do we do on Friday? Do we practice? Do we do another walkthrough? You know, where are we traveling? When are we going to Columbia? You know, there's all kinds of these conversations. The players, man, you know, they're resilient. The coaches spend a lot of fall camp and two-a-days and all that stuff basically making them go through stuff that they don't like and that's different than they expect just so they can learn how to handle things
right
that are being thrown at them. But, man, like the guys who had to figure out, hey, who's cooking pregame meal now?
Yeah, like on Sunday morning.
Yeah, what are we going
to
do?
Yeah, we're going to go over to the lizard thicket over there and get some. You know, where are we going to get? I mean, I know they'll have it all figured. Like you said, they'll have it all figured out. But it's just it's just something extra that you have to worry about, and you got to hope that you've got all your T's crossed and your I's dotted, just that you don't forget something.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe it can work out. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Do people now pray for the dogs in church on Sunday morning? Since it's, I don't know. I don't think it works like that.
No.
But, you know, it's going to be different watching Georgia play in the middle of an afternoon on Sunday when
– with all the NFL games going on.
Yeah, you got red zone going over there. But, I mean, it's no question for me. I will watch the Georgia game.
Yeah.
I mean, because I prefer that way over NFL. But it's definitely going to be a different dynamic. What's the crowd going to be like? I mean, it's just –
that's another thing. I mean, this – I guess it favors Georgia as far as the crowd goes. It's not going to be – it's not going to be like it would have been Saturday night at 7:30.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be totally different. Even when they played LSU last year over in Baton Rouge on that short week, when they had to go over there, that stadium was only, I think, about half full.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You're LSU fans. You know, they're crazy about LSU football. It's just,
yeah.
A lot of people just already have stuff going on that they can't get away from.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, Monday's Columbus Day. The banks are closed. So, you know, there could be people planning to do something for the rest of the weekend.
It's kind of a long weekend.
Somebody might say, man, we got to go to work tomorrow morning. I can't stay over here and watch these two teams.
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
Butt heads. So, you know, I don't know. It's I guess it's the fun part about looking at it and planning it. But, I mean, my couch ain't going to move regardless if it's Saturday or Sunday. I'll be watching it same spot. So,
well, you know, it's funny, and not that anyone cares that's listening to us about radio stuff, but it's like, everyone here's kind of having to scramble because orders for commercials and stuff have to be changed and all that kind of. And like I said, it's not, you know.
That's a first world problem.
Exactly. That is a first world problem, but it is just kind of funny how, you know, it just, you know, you just got to. You got to make adjustments, and people do that, and it's not a big deal, but that's just how things work. So we're going to go to the phones at 706-549-6000, and we got our man Bulldog Bert from Greenwood, South Carolina. What's up, Bert?
Oh, we're going to have Sunday football.
You got that right.
And it is going to go on. We didn't do like Florida LSU. We didn't try to bail out.
I still can't believe they didn't get that worked out. I can't believe the SEC didn't make them work that out.
Yeah. I think this happened one other time, though. There was a hurricane hit, and anyway. And I knew the Carolina people were all barking, crowing, excuse me.
There you go.
This week that we're not going to move that game to Athens. I done heard that 50 million times, and they were hell-bent determined not to do it. And they did it. They pulled it off, but I was looking at the map. I think the rain will probably be gone by tomorrow mid-afternoon. We probably could have played it last night, but they sort of got in a wrangle over here. It was funny to listen to the governor, Nikki Haley, as she was sort of pressing them, you know, not to have it. And then the local sheriff, Rich in Kansas, said, we can cover all the bases. We don't need the highway patrol or anything. He was trying to score political points with some of the Gamecock fans. So it was funny to listen to that going on and wrangling. But it's going to be a close game. I don't think we're going to run away with it. I think it's going to be closer than we're thinking because Carolina is probably going to start Perry Orr. I'm not expecting them to put McElwain back out there, especially the points he put up toward the end against Texas A&M, which I did not get to watch all that game. I was still glued to the TV for Tennessee and Georgia. And I asked my wife three times, I said, what just happened? Did he really score?
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
But there's not going to be no Hail Marys in South Carolina. Don't worry about that.
You going to the game,
no
Bert?
No Hail Mary. No, I'm not because of church, but I am having a little tailgate at the house.
All right. Good stuff then. All right. Well, pull us through over there, okay, Bert?
We're going to do it.
All right. Great to hear from you. Our man Bulldog Bert from Greenwood, South Carolina. And we're joined here in the studio, as we always are, in the 8 o'clock hour, Fridays before home games. Our man, Russ Tanner, former Georgia center, mortgage banker of Prime Lending, and you can find Russ online at athenslender.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just got to hear from the great Bulldog Bert.
Calling in. Was it like an annual tradition on the Georgia-Carolina week you hear from him? Or
no,
he
calls
more
in,
often.
He calls in once every couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay. See, we get Bert a good bit.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I like Bert.
It is interesting, though, just with all the – why things are happening, who's making the decisions about playing versus not. And when you start getting into political issues like that, I mean, I understand the governor up there where you're basically saying, you know, people are going to get on you if you don't play the game and then you end up with 3 inches of rain and it's fine. You know, people say, oh, you should have played. It's ridiculous not to. But at the same time, like, what if it hits bad? What if it comes and hits the coast and tears up Charleston?
Yeah.
What if, you know, people in Hilton Head and Savannah and all down through there really get torn up, then you're playing a football game when you should have resources dedicated elsewhere. So that's
I mean, that does make sense. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's the reason why.
Yeah, and I would totally get that. And the thing last year, you know, they were having this flooding, and I mean, it had already happened, and there were people that were, you know, dying. I mean, it wasn't like they had to wait and decide if they were going to move the game to LSU or not. That one was pretty simple there for them, but this one was different just because you didn't know what the hurricane was going to do.
Yeah.
And still, so, I guess technically, we aren't quite sure yet what it's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, this is my opinion. I understand that my opinion is like a belly button. Everybody's got one. Nobody needs another one. So, you know, I mean, I think the game probably should have been moved to the dome. I mean, it's not that far away for South Carolina to make it to the Georgia Dome. You know, you end up with a neutral site game, and it probably could have been, you know, accommodated as far as timing and whatnot.
Right.
And that way, you're not – if something does happen bad on the coast, you know, down in the low country for those folks, you're not in a situation to where you can't get all hands on deck to go help people who are in real danger.
Sure.
So, I mean
– yeah, you're leaving the authorities in South Carolina to handle the other stuff there too. So, yeah, I mean, the fact, though, that Georgia State had a game at 3:30, I mean, not that that couldn't have been worked
moved
out
to 12
or something
like that.
But, you know, that certainly wouldn't have seemed like it was one of the harder things for them to try and figure out. Well, of course, this, you know, that sets up all the jokes, you know, for, like, South Carolina. Like, oh, see, they finally get to play in the dome. Or, you know, now that they're playing on – Sunday, you know, it's like, oh yeah, now these South Carolina players, recruiting was what they told them was true. They're gonna play on Sundays
in the dome,
you know. So just dumb stuff like that.
Yeah. But, so you know, I mean,
but I, someone who has family there, family on the coast, family in Columbia. I mean, this week I was like, I don't care if the game gets played. Yeah. I mean, I want it to be played. I mean, that's not true. I want it to be played, but not at the expense
of people's safety,
of people that I know and people I don't know. Yeah, people's safety. Yeah. Relatives and friends.
So hopefully this hurricane decides to stay off coast and turn and go back out into the ocean and, you know, beat itself up and die. And it's not anything more than a little bit of wind, a little bit of rain, and nobody gets hurt. But, you know, that's the risk. And hopefully we don't have to come into anything like that. And we say, man, glad we got this game in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we stay so focused on the off-the-field stuff here with the hurricane and everything. It's almost like I've kind of had people ask me, well, like, you know, what about the matchup itself? You know, like, what about the game? And I think that, you know, that almost just becomes so secondary with all this other stuff going on and trying to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah, it becomes secondary to the people who are, you know, ancillary to the game, who are around
well,
to make
of course,
it happen.
Not the actual
now, for the
team.
For the players and the coaches, you know, players and coaches in football, and it's like this in most sports, but in football, I can speak to that because that was the one sport I played. You focus on what's in front of you. You know, there's all this coach speak about one game at a time. You handle the thing right in front of you. And you tell yourself those things so many times where it actually becomes what you believe and what you do. Mm-hmm. Whereas we can't look ahead to next week and we can only handle the things we can control. I mean, coaches say that over and over and over again. We get so bored of it. We get so tired of it. We want you to say, yeah, we're playing Vandy this week. And, I mean, they ain't real good. So we're going to just, you know, put enough in to play them, then we're going to get ready for Florida in 2 weeks. I mean, that's what we're doing. I mean, if you want to do real talk, that's what we're doing.
That's what's going on.
But coaches can't say that out loud because they don't want their players to think that or believe it. So it really gets into the standpoint of you honestly believe, all right, well, we're going to control what we can control. Good gracious. We're going to prepare as best as we can prepare, and we're going to be ready to play regardless of what the SEC tells us to do. And when they step out there, when it's time for practice, when it's time for film, when it's time for the game, they have the ability to focus on what's in front of them and block out all the noise. Hopefully when they're off the field, they have some awareness of what's going on, what they can do to help, and, you know, are aware of other people hurting and can be compassionate towards that. But when it's time to play the game, those guys will be able to – man, they'll strap that chin strap up tight. They'll get ready to roll, and it'll be game on for them.
Anthony emails in and says, we should really be telling the Georgia fans to go to the game. Tickets are cheap, and it's only about a three-hour drive, so it could certainly be a day trip. And Shane emails in and says, if they never make up the game, Rocky Top would explode if Florida finished 6-1 and won the East ahead of a 6-2 Tennessee. Yes, they would. They would absolutely explode.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, like Tennessee, man, they're going to be mad.
I mean, I would love for that to happen, other than the fact that means that Florida will beat Georgia.
Right.
So I don't. Yeah. So I don't want it, but – if somehow, let's let Tennessee lose one more, and then,
then, yeah, see then how it plays out.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, see how it plays out. Yeah. It certainly could be crazy stuff for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, we look at stuff like that, and I saw an article earlier that was from LSU's SB Nation page.
Yeah.
And it's just like an article where the guy wrote it, and I'll just read something real quick off of it. In one of his final acts as Florida's AD, Jeremy Foley pulled off a top-shelf con job right under the nose of Southeastern Conference and Commissioner Greg Sankey. Am I saying there's been some dishonesty on Foley and Florida's behalf in this situation? Yes. Let me be clear. That is absolutely what I'm saying. So LSU is not very happy.
How did the SEC not just step in and say, you've got to do this?
Move the game to Tampa. Play it in games.
Do something.
Go to Tallahassee. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Go to Valdosta. They got a nice stadium.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It seems like that needed to have been worked out, and the fact that they couldn't is certainly interesting.
A lot of politics in play, David Johnson.
Yes, there are.
A lot of people who have alternate
motivations. Different agendas.
For what's happening.
I get it. I totally get it. All right, Russ Tanner here in the studio with us. All right, back here on the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. David Johnston, Sam Franco with you. Russ Tanner, former Georgia Center, mortgage banker of Prime Lending. And AthensLender.com is the website. We got about five or so more minutes. We complain about Florida LSU, but we don't really need to do that.
Hey.
Here's another weird thing about tomorrow.
All right.
Is that it's almost like an off weekend for Georgia because you can watch all the football games without having to worry about the dogs.
It's not a bad setup for the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as us fans stay at home and watching the game.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It works out pretty well.
You got the run of the games, and they're actually some of the bigger games are spread out pretty good. If I can get my notes here, I'll throw those at you. But tonight Clemson and Boston College play, but like the Alabama-Arkansas game is tomorrow night at 7, and then the Tennessee-Texas A&M game is at 3:30. And the LSU-Florida game is at noon. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not.
Oh, wah, wah,
wah. Yeah, the LSU-Florida game was supposed to be at noon, so you had those three. You had up like that, yeah. Now you got Auburn and Mississippi State at noon as your backup.
Ooh.
I know. Maybe not quite the same.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be a good weekend of football. And hopefully, the weather will stay off the coast and no real bad damage anywhere, and we can enjoy it. And then, if the Dawgs come up and win Sunday, man, we're going to think, man, this is pretty cool. We like this Sunday afternoon stuff. The other guys we talked about earlier felt bad for, like, the logistics team. The other ones I feel bad for now, man, these assistant coaches. Because come Sunday, when it comes time for game preparation for Vanderbilt, it's just, the players don't really lose that much. They lose an off day. Sunday's their day off, and that's the one day they lose. So I guess they actually probably will have to give them – probably today or tomorrow off then, technically, to meet the NCAA guidelines.
Right.
The players, because you got to have an off day a week or, whatever.
Yeah.
There's this fake thing called the 20-hour rule where it says that you have to sign a thing every year that says we don't participate more than 20 hours a week in football-related activities.
You think that's funny? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. But, man, these coaches, when they come back, they go up and watch film on Sunday and start getting ready for that game plan and knowing what they're going to do. They are going to be pulling late night hours about trying to prepare for that Vanderbilt game the following week. So,
it's Vanderbilt. It doesn't matter. Georgia's going to win that game easily. And
yeah, we're already looking ahead from that one, right?
That's right. Yeah, good thing it's only Vanderbilt.
Easy.
Yeah, those are the kind of words that get you beat.
Yeah, but hey, I feel better now going in against teams that are not offensive juggernauts, because even though Easton is playing better than probably expected overall, and Georgia can't score points, you still don't have the confidence Georgia's going to go out there and hang 40 every week when we play.
Right.
And you play in Ole Miss and Tennessee, you pretty much knew you're going to have to hang 40 to win the game. At least we're playing teams that are not high-powered offenses. And, maybe we'll see this defense turn around and actually be dominant for a little bit. Because, there's some players over there.
That'd be nice.
Fans like to either get on the bandwagon. People have to go to one extreme or the other. It's either, Kirby's the wrong hire. Why do we bring him? It's ridiculous. Yeah. Or, Kirby's the man. It's Coach Rick's fault for leaving the cupboard so bare. Neither one of those things are totally true at all.
Right.
It's somewhere in the middle of – not that Kirby's not the right guy, because I think he is for now. But you've got to give him time to develop and get his stuff in. And Coach Rick, you know, it's not all on Coach Rick, but there are obvious talent gap issues with this team. But the cupboard is not bare. You've got guys like Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, you know, guys who are uber talented and physically built, but are not dominating anything. And maybe we can see those guys start to turn it on a little bit and propel this team towards what we hope they're going to be for the Kirby Smart era.
And who knows? I mean, maybe they're going to just be mad about the way that Tennessee game ended, too. I mean,
yeah.
Take some pride.
Yeah, hopefully their tail's not tucked. Hopefully you don't go that direction. Because when we played Ole Miss, so hopefully those guys have the loser mentality and just show up not ready to play. Well, they did the opposite. They showed up, revved up, executing, knocking heads. And hopefully Georgia's going to do that same thing coming this week.
You kind of expect them to. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, yeah, the ending of that game stunk, but Dogs played their best game of the season.
Yep.
In that game.
And the offensive line actually looked a lot better.
Yeah.
Some issues with pass protection still.
Right.
But as far as the running game and getting guys moving and giving the running backs holes and opportunities, it was there. You give Chaney some credit and Sam Pittman some credit. If you watch it, you saw a lot more movement out of the offensive line as far as guys pulling, guys getting out moving, trying to get out there in some one-on-one situations and have a chance to block somebody instead of just having to blow those big sookies off the ball. So
hey, Cublano pulls a decent amount.
He pulls a good bit.
Did you? Did they get you pulled?
They let me practice one time. They're like, "All right, yeah, no more of that."
moves pretty good for
Cublano,
big guy.
Yeah, he moves pretty good.
Yeah,
and you see him pulling a good bit, and those guards pull a lot.
Yeah,
which is something. Now I don't think we saw as much in the first part of the season, but they moved him a lot in Tennessee, and it paid off. The running game was a whole lot better than it had been.
Were you surprised that Harrion and Sony got about the same number of touches?
I mean, Harrion runs hard.
Yeah.
I mean, that cat is strong in the lower body, and he hits the hole hard. He knows nothing about being a patient running back right now, which is okay sometimes. I mean, he's just wide open, and he always gets another yard or two, which you got to love in a cat like that.
So. I like it. I didn't know the chump thing where he only carried one time, and you're like, well, did he tweak his ankle again, or was it just one of those things where
– Yeah, they probably wanted to just put him out there and see how he did.
Yeah, I mean, that was just kind of strange. But, like you said, the running game looked a lot better, and that was good to see.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think for this week, you know, obviously you're not playing a team that's on the same caliber as Tennessee, so it's really just for the rest of the season, especially with your young guys, it's about just getting better each week, you know, getting out there and making sure that you execute better and don't make as many mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give any credit to Tennessee because I can't stand them. They're my least favorite team that we play against, and, you know, they stink. But
other than that.
But we like to get – yeah, other than that, we like to give Butch Jones a bunch of crap over the last few years about this whole brick-by-brick thing. You know, three-star general, bricklayer, joker.
Yeah,
I mean, we like to give Gomer Pyles – twin brother crap.
That's right.
But what he was saying was right, and you're seeing that pay off for those guys now, to where they went through some lean times. They went through some times even under Butch where it was tough. They had to build the talent level back up. They had to get guys to buy into where they're at. And this year, right now, say what you want, Tennessee is a legitimate playoff contending team. I mean, if they can run the table, and even if their only loss is to Alabama in the SEC championship game, they've got a great shot at being in the playoff and really making some noise on a national level. And that's what these players had to buy into from a Georgia standpoint.
Russ, you're the man. Great to see you. Have a good weekend. We'll catch you next Friday.